Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day.
Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio, brought to you by the Hard Truth Distilling Company in Brown County, Indiana.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, it's time!
Three on the way. Oh, Elian! Elian! And Indiana wins the ball game!
Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni!
Float game for the win!
Ayler's gone. Goodbye, touchdown, Indy!
Pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop.
Oh. Now, from the Hard Truth Studios, here's Jim Coyle.
Hey, welcome aboard, everybody. Appreciate you being with us on this Monday. Glad to have you along, no matter where or how you're listening, as we get caught up on the weekend's sports action. But of course, nothing bigger than the Pacers, as they are now heading to the NBA Finals. I hope everyone is doing well and having a good day. I noticed that as I'm viewing things, that everything looks backwards in my on my view. But hopefully you're not hearing me backwards. That wouldn't be much fun. But looking forward to Greg Rakestraw joining us here in a little bit, and also Dustin Napieric on the show today, and Zach Browning will get you caught up with everything that is happening on football with IU and everything else. As it's going to be a fun sports season that's going to just keep on going, especially now with the Pacers in the NBA Finals. This thing starts Thursday, so that will take a couple of weeks. We'll be into mid-June. The basketball players have all arrived on campus as of now. So they are getting ready for workouts. They're probably already have started those. And lots going on as it will continue to happen now. So we will get to mid-June by the time the finals are over. Then we're a month away from the Big Ten football media days out in Las Vegas, which happens in July, of course. Then in August, you'll have football fall camp going on, of course, but also the basketball trip to Puerto Rico, and boom, it doesn't stop. So hang on, people. It's man, it has been, and that's what happens when you have good programs. Like Indiana is starting to develop. The football program, boom, is there right now. And hopefully it stays there. And there's odds are that it will under Coach Cignetti's direction, as good as he has appeared to run things. Basketball, I think that that's going to be headed in the right direction. I really do. I'm not saying that they're going to go out and start winning national titles, but I'm not saying that they're not going to get to that point sooner rather than later. Because Derek DeVries seems like somebody who is going to put his all into what he's doing. And he has a great staff to do it and great resources and all of that. So looking forward to that. Greg Rakestraw, going ahead and jumping on with us now. Greg, how are you, my friend?
Good morning.
How's your weekend?
Weekend was busy, which is kind of a mixture and variety of things, but able to check out at least a good chunk of a Pacers game that was rather historic on Saturday night.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest and say my weekend was not busy. I enjoyed the hell, and I'm not saying this to rub it into you because you're always busy, but wow, it seemed like it was just the first weekend that I knew ahead of time I didn't have to do anything. And I'm like, I'm going to enjoy the hell out of it. But yeah, not having to do anything, because I was just talking about right before you joined us how it has not stopped yet. Whether it's the Pacers or the event at Huber's or what are the Indy 500, we've just had things just continue after the college seasons have gone on. Well, now we've got All-Stars coming up. The players have arrived at on IU campus for basketball, which they'll and elsewhere next month. Big Ten Media Days out in Las Vegas. It doesn't stop, man. It just keeps on rolling, but that's okay. That's better than the alternative.
Correct. From a, the sports talk radio calendar, you would get to June and July and you would hope to have, you know, at least relevant topics into June, knowing that once you got to like, say the end of June, you'd have the NBA draft and NBA free agency. You'd have a couple of down weeks, then Colts training camp starts, and I always would jokingly refer to the beginning of Colts training camp as the start of the sports fiscal year. So that you kind of knew what the next several months were going to be like once you got to that point. Well, now that the Indiana Pacers are playing until Father's Day at the earliest, and potentially playing a week beyond that, there will not be a summer, so to speak, from an Indianapolis sports topic conversation. This will blend right from the NBA finals all the way into Colts training camp. So here we go.
No, and that's awesome to be honest with you. I mean, it's that keeps us busy, which is good on one hand. On the other, I'd sure like a break, but that's okay. It's fun. So I could be digging ditches and doing worse things. But it's great to have that, because that means things are going well around you. And whether it's the Pacers or the Colts or Indiana or whomever, it's just fun to have positive sports teams happening where you are.
And to put it in perspective, and I did this math a couple of weeks ago, and I'm going to try to do it while I'm on the air with you. Obviously, that next step from conference finals to NBA finals, it's tough for every team. It's been very tough for the Pacers. You know, it's a Pacers organization that I want to say since 1994 had made the Eastern Conference Finals 10 times. There's not many in the East or West that have been there more often than the Indiana Pacers. But obviously, this is just NBA Finals number two. And so being able to play till about Memorial Day, it's, I wouldn't say expected, but it's common. It's happened. For this to be the first finals in 25 years, that kind of is attention grabbing. Makes you sit down and think about it.
Yeah, and it's fun, but it also shows how you don't have to have, quote unquote, what the NBA sees as a superstar on your team. I'm not saying that they don't have superstars in Pascal Siakam or Tyrese Halliburton. They do. They've just been undervalued by other people, their peers, I would say. But after this, it's kind of hard to, I'd love to see that poll go out again, that where some NBA players apparently allegedly voted Tyrese Halliburton as the most overrated player in the NBA. I'd like to see that poll go around one more time. As LeBron James pointed out, where are you? Where are you? I forget what he said, but he sent out a tweet like a week ago saying, yeah, where are you people now? Quiet.
You know, of the 12 guys that played for Team USA in last year's Olympics, Jim, you know how many players are playing in this year's NBA Finals?
One.
It's the guy that wears number zero for the Indiana Pacers.
That was a good
guess. It's Tyrese Halliburton. Again, the guy that didn't get to play much, the guy that didn't get off the bench a whole lot, but it's him. And, you know, the older I get, the less of a darn, you're welcome, that I tend to give about the perception of others, and especially the perception of others in the national media. I don't care. Just give me the end result. And that's exactly what the Indiana Pacers have done now for three consecutive rounds of the NBA playoffs.
Yeah, and what a run. I mean, they've had it where they've won these series, none of which going seven games, which impressive because of who they're beating. Not Milwaukee per se, but after that, Cleveland, number one seed. Hello. You shut them down pretty much. And then New York, I'm not going to say they shut them down, but it didn't go seven games. So the Pacers are playing very, very good basketball. No one gives them a shot against Oklahoma City. We'll talk about that later. Let's enjoy the now and what they just accomplished because they were the number four seed, man. I remember, you know, Kristen Arias on with us each week as well. And I remember early in the season talking that they were bouncing down there between six and eight. And it's like, ooh, man, they're not doing well. Then all of a sudden they just started sliding up and got, especially starting in January, things changed for that team. It came together, I guess, which sometimes you see that a lot where teams are just not there. And all of a sudden, boom, they click. And that's what has happened with the Pacers from January forward.
Well, the issue that the Pacers had at start the season was the injury bug. And namely, it was Andrew Nembhard and Aaron Nesmith. And because those guys play similar positions, you know, obviously one of the elements that got this team to where it's gotten so far is their depth. And clearly that was a key element to the series win against the Knicks. Well, that depth was tested early in the season. And so once this group got healthy, then seemingly it was everything moving forward. So again, they were a 50-win team, which is an improvement from last year, a slight improvement. But to be honest with you, Jim, I thought I liked their chances against the Bucks. And I thought that's kind of where the run was going to end for this team. I'm like, I don't know if they can beat the Cavaliers. But going into that Cavaliers series, my thought was, hey, the Cavs do not have significantly more playoff experience than the Indiana Pacers. In fact, the Pacers had a little bit more. And to some degree, you could say that about Oklahoma City. You know, obviously, this is an Oklahoma City team that has been stockpiling draft picks for seemingly a decade. Ever since Kevin Durant left to go to the Warriors about a decade ago, it's been just build and build and build and pick and pick and pick and pick after pick. And well, now here they are, you know, with the best record in the NBA. And again, they're going to be the favorites, and that's all right. And again, if you ask me to make a neutral, you know, prediction, I'd probably pick Oklahoma City in this series too. They're really good. But a lot of the same things you would say about the Cavaliers series, you would say about this series. It's not like there is this gargantuan amount of NBA playoff experience that Oklahoma City has that the Indiana Pacers don't. What I do think Oklahoma City has is a slightly better star play because Donovan Mitchell was really good for the Cavaliers. And obviously Jalen Brunson was really good for the New York Knicks. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is a little bit better. But what I don't expect is for the Indiana Pacers to have their doors blown off or be left in the dust by Oklahoma City. I think this is going to be a very competitive series that starts on Thursday.
Absolutely, and I'm looking forward to it all hopes that the Pacers can do not the impossible, but it would definitely be an upset, and I'm not going to say otherwise. It would be an upset. As you mentioned, Oklahoma City's favored in this, and they should be. They have the better record. They have had the better run. They've got the player of the year. We'll see. That's why they played the games, baby, I can't remember his name, but the old Arizona State coach. That's why they play the games. And that is because no one would have picked the Pacers to beat New York. No one would have picked them to beat Cleveland before that, I don't think. Well, very few did. The ESPN guys, what are they, 0-22, I heard? I think I've heard that they are 0-22 in the Pacers series.
I would assume that's in the last two, because I think all 11 would have picked the Cavaliers. And I don't know if that was the case in the Knicks series, because frankly, you know, once the Pacers beat the Cavs, you kind of said, hey, I like their chances against the Knicks. So again, I'm not going to try to cast stones, A, for people having an opinion, and B, you know, when my opinion might have been similar. So again, I would have said the Cavs over the Pacers. I said the Pacers over the Knicks, which is exactly how it played out. And again, you know, let's use a little math here. Oklahoma City, A, won both matchups against the Pacers this year, and B, won 18 more games than the Pacers did. Oklahoma City is really good. They're not unbeatable. And you know, it's going to be a fun series starting on Thursday.
What else is going on with you, my friend? I know we've got a lot of Pacers, but I'm wearing my vroom, baby. Vroom, baby. That's a pretty good one.
Well, I've got basketball too, but I've got Indiana All-Star basketball. So yesterday was the Indiana junior game against Kentucky. Played at Charlestown. Indiana won both games. Girls won in a rout by 42. Boys led by 30-plus. Ended up being an 11-point game, but the Indiana boys won. Luke Ertl was tremendous, scored 36 points, and played 34 of 40 minutes, even with 10 players in uniform. Todd Wolfley said, I just couldn't take him off the floor. So a good start for Indiana. Tonight is the futures game, so the top sophomores and freshmen in the state will play. That's at Fishers. Wednesday night, it is the Indiana juniors versus the Indiana seniors. Those games are played at Greenfield Central, and that place, at least for the guys' game, should be full because you will have Braylon Mullins, Julius Gizzy, and Luke Ertl all playing in their home county in Hancock County, and Greenfield Central holds about 3,300. And so my guess is that place is going to be full on Wednesday night. Kentucky game is at Lexington Catholic High School on Friday night. And how about this for timing? The Indiana Kentucky All-Stars will be at Gainbridge Fieldhouse. They managed to avoid both a Fever home game and the NBA Finals. So we're playing at Gainbridge on Saturday night, 4 days before the NBA Finals come to town.
What would have happened had the NBA Finals been scheduled for a home right. game then?
Well, the game would have been moved. As simple as that. Probably Southport Fieldhouse would have been. Probably Southport would have been where it would have gone because they are not allowed to play that game at a Division I college basketball facility. So there actually are a couple of NCAA rules that still exist, apparently, and that's one of them. So, like, for example, for a couple of years, the Indiana-Kentucky game was played at Bellarmine on the Kentucky side. When Bellarmine made the jump to Division I, could not play the game at Bellarmine anymore. So you couldn't play it on a college campus. You could have gone maybe to the Indiana Farmers Coliseum. But frankly, some place like Fisher, Southport's the biggest high school gym in Indy that has 7,000 seats. That's where it was for a couple of years. When they were doing construction, COVID, et cetera. So if for some reason they would have had to have defaulted on that, Southport would have likely been the landing spot.
Yeah, I know that's for quote-unquote recruiting reasons, but it is funny. The few rules that are actually left seem stupid as hell. There was one that I can't remember that I really just laugh at. The one that gets me is if you're recruiting a kid, you can't talk about him. You can't say his name. And I'm like, everybody on God's green earth knows it's in every publication, but the coach can't say his name. I'm like, it's so stupid. That just shows you how many stupid rules there were, but big deal. But that's a lot coming up, man. That is a lot. The juniors, obviously. Hey, what shot do they have of the juniors beating the seniors? I'm always curious about that. Oh, I think I lost Greg for a second. He'll pop back in here, but yeah, I'm
sorry
always,
about that.
Curious. That's okay. What shot do the juniors have of beating the seniors this year?
I would say better on the girls' side than the boys' side, but this senior class in both is really stinking good. You know, on the girls' side, there were four or five legitimate Miss Basketball candidates. Maya McAlusky wins it and goes on to Indiana University. On the boys' side, there was an obvious Mr. Basketball in Braylon Mullins. Team was not as deep, but clearly, you know, 10 to 11 all-star caliber players. It's a deeper class than was last year's. it is a deeper class than what the next year's group is going to be. You know, in yesterday's game, I thought when the top seniors were on the floor, or top juniors were on the floor, they looked really good. When you got to like kind of the second string, there's a bit of a drop off there. And I think that continues when you bring in five or six new faces coming in for Wednesday night. So the seniors, I think, should win both. My best guess would be the girls game should be more competitive than the boys game would be.
Well, we'll look forward to that. And what about the seniors in Kentucky? I don't know much about the Kentucky side, I'll be honest with you. And I know that the Kentucky side is, as usual, a little light with guys like Jalen Harrelson and Trent Sisley not able to play in this. And so that would have made them a much more formidable team. But they still have several guys like Braylon Mullins and et cetera that will be filling that roster.
Kentucky's pretty good. Malachi Moreno, that is headed to play at the University of Kentucky, played AAU ball with a lot of the guys from Indiana. And so, you know, Indiana split with Kentucky last year, really had to hustle to win the second game and avoid getting swept. And again, that was a team that, you know, you had Flory Badunga, you had Jack Benner, and then there was a pretty significant drop-off once you got kind of past the top couple of players. Again, this year's group is a deeper group, but it's you know, they'll get a good test on the boys' side from Kentucky coming up on Friday and Saturday.
When's the last time that Kentucky swept Indiana? That's been a minute.
It had been at least 20 years since that has been the case, and maybe back even to the mid-90s. You know, Indiana had a run for a decade where they didn't lose. That they lost in a double overtime game, I want to say in 2017, when the game was played in Frankfurt. They lost the game last year at Lexington Catholic on Friday night. And Flory Badunga mysteriously had four fouls pretty early in that game.
Yeah.
Amazing how that works. Amazing how that works in Kentucky. Again, Indiana is the favorite most years for this year. But again, I think they will be competitive games on the boys' side. Last year, the junior-senior game wasn't in girls. And again, senior class, my guess would be that it should be the head for those two games coming up this weekend.
Well, we look forward to it, my friend. And make sure you're giving Greg a follow and keeping up with everything. It's on the ISC Sports Network as well. Anything else coming up?
No, I guess plenty, man. I think having a week to do, that's a slower week for me after the last 4 or 5 weeks. You can probably hear it in my voice a little bit. Told people, from the business standpoint, summer starts today. From the broadcast standpoint, summer starts Saturday night at about 9:30.
According to Brian, the last time Kentucky swept the All-Stars was 86. That can't be right, can it?
I think there was a 95 or a 96 where they did too, if I remember. I've got it in my notes, just not right in front of me. But I think it happened at one point in time in the 90s as well. I could be wrong about that.
Yeah, you don't want to be on the team that lets that happen again.
I will say this, Jim. Had Chris Lofton not rolled his ankle in 2004 or 2005, we would have been in 2004 because George Hill and that group were playing in that game. Kentucky would have won. He was the best player of the two teams. That was still in the two-weekend format. He had 41 down at the Sports Center in Owensboro. He gets hurt 4 or 5 minutes in against Indiana at the Fieldhouse, and that kind of completely changed the dynamic of the game. So sometimes it's because of injuries or players not being able to play. Having been there for those games, because I've been there for most of them over the last decade and kind of off and on, over the last 20 years, there have been years where Kentucky's been the better team and it just didn't work out for whatever reason. That's one of those times that I'll give you the asterisk on that one.
Away from that, back to the Pacers real quick. For the first time since 2007, the NBA Finals will feature two teams who did not play on Christmas Day.
I like that. Right. And again, I'll give you a stat back at you, because obviously you will get some that will complain about the market size of the two teams and the Midwest Nice NBA championship we're about to have. But the last time, Jim, that Indianapolis and Oklahoma City competed for a championship in something against each other would be the 1996 American Association Championship Series, won by the Oklahoma City 89ers, by the way, 3-1.
Dadgone it. Oh, well. Maybe we'll swap it this time. What's up next for you, brother?
All-Star Week, this stuff. So, futures game tonight.
Enjoy it. Make sure you're listening and tuning in and keeping up with everything they have on the ISC Sports Network. Greg Rakestraw, appreciate you, my friend.
Talk to you next week.
All right, brother. Have a great one. Hey, we've got more. Back with it on the other side from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios on this Monday. Getting your week started off. I hope you had a great weekend. Not a lot going on. Well, that's not true. I mean, NBA, the Indiana Pacers getting their shot to go to the NBA Finals. So other than that, it was kind of a relaxing weekend and grateful for that. Gritty saying a shout out to Coach Kurt Cignetti. Happy birthday to him. I believe that was yesterday or was it today? I'm not sure. But happy birthday to the big man. Looking forward to the Pacers in the NBA Finals. That'll be fun as that gets started on Thursday. Weird stat about the Christmas Day thing. But did you see? I mean, I don't know if the Indy Star considers it an embarrassment or the old adage that no publicity is all publicity is good or. Ernie, the TNT host, Ernie, I can't think of his last name, but he was kind of hosting the post-game celebration, handing out the trophy and all of that stuff. And Pascal Siakam won the MVP award. And as he was talking to him, said, well, you won't have to worry about dealing with questions about playing hard enough now. And everyone laughed. I don't know if their boss is looking at it, it's like, oh, wow, that's great that it got that notoriety because there are a lot of, the old adage is bad publicity. No publicity is bad publicity. And while it didn't reference the Indy Star, we all know what and whom they're talking about. But I don't think that it's good, especially when you've got the two, both major basketball franchises that has had issues. Now, I will say this, and people need to understand, the job of a newspaper columnist is not to make everybody happy and to drop roses and make it rainbows and unicorns. You got to say stuff in your articles and this and that. And I get that and appreciate that. But drawing that kind of attention, that's not it. That's not what they're wanting. That's not what is good. But it is what it is. So who cares? We'll move on. But man, Indiana, hey, the Pacers. So looking forward to their opportunity. I think they've got a better chance than people think, but we shall see. Big John was in the house, Papa John. Papa John Halliburton, who I mean. So Brian says he's not a reporter. He's a still a reporter. But the columnist is more at it. But, yeah, that's it. Hey, Indiana basketball, they've been busy, 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 busy. Scholarship offers going out, Indiana continued. And you need to go to thehoosier.com. I'm telling you, on three, get yourself a subscription. Help us at that. helping those guys helps us. It helps us get better interviews for you, helps us do a lot of things, but also you can get a ton of information that the average person does not get. So I would greatly appreciate it as I ask you to go to thehoosier.com. Do it right now. You get a subscription for $1 for the first month, 50% off for the rest of the year. And I assure you the information in there will be more, it will more than suffice. I know some of you are subscribers already. I think Gritty's a subscriber. But Indiana offers a scholarship to 2026 four-star center Collins Onyeka. And I've talked about this. These guys have been out on the recruiting trail, man. They had the fact that they had to fill an entire roster and an entire staff and have hit the trail recruiting like this shows the night and day difference that Indiana basketball has in its coaching staff. It's magnified. I mean, by a factor of 10, but Indiana continued to look for the future on Friday, extending a scholarship offer to class of 2026 four-star center Collins Onyeka. He is a 270-pound junior, so he's not some skinny kid. He's 6'10", 270. At the Newman School in Boston, announced a scholarship on social media. He's originally from Nigeria, ranked 110 nationally in the 2026 class by On3. He ranks as the number 3 player in Massachusetts. So Indiana going after big guys, every guy. This team is not necessarily indicative of what it's going to be like in the future, I think. But pretty much, I think that they'll have athletic big guys. But he's a developing big man with size and mobility. He averaged almost 10 points and 8 rebounds and 3 blocks per game in the past season. He plays AAU ball for Team New England on the Made Hoop circuit. He's a big 6'10", has long arms and showed mobility throughout the weekend. On three, national recruiting analyst Jamie Shaw, who will be with us tomorrow, by the way, wrote in a scouting report last year, still new to the game, he tracked the ball well, attacked the glass, both in his area and on the offensive end. He is an intriguing prospect. Yeah, Jamie Shaw with us tomorrow from On3, one of their basketball national senior writers, will join us. So looking forward to that. Also, let's see, later in, Zach Browning with us today as well. We'll talk some football later. I'm trying to think who else is going to be with us later. Oh, Bob Kravitz, normally with us on Thursday, will be on Friday because he is going to be in Oklahoma City for the start of the Pacers game. So looking forward to that. 2026 rising guard Bryson Howard also lands a scholarship offer from Indiana. Heritage Texas High School product from Pro Skills on the Nike EYBL circuit. He's the son of former NBA player and Wake Forest standout wing Josh Howard. You may remember that name. He played 10 seasons in the NBA. Bryson Howard has been one of the standout performers this spring, almost 21 points, 5.5 rebounds, shooting 45% from three. Yes, I said 45.5% from three, 25 of 55, damn near 50%. That's pretty, pretty, pretty good. So a lot going on. Indiana just busy. There's a lot more than that and a lot more that you can find at thehoosier.com because there are more like Cole Clower, Bruce Branch, Trey Thompson. A lot of offers, a lot of things going on in the basketball world for Indiana that you can keep up with at thehoosier.com. Prince Alexander Moody, scheduled visit. There's so much going on that you have to keep up with it. Yeah, you got to be in there. But Trey Thompson gets an offer. This basketball staff is busy. They're out after it. They're not handing out offers from the office. They are out in the field. They are out working. It's going to be such a night and day difference in the program. I'm looking forward to it for the fans because it is going to be fun for them. It's going to be fun to cover. It's always fun covering a winner. It's like football last year and will again be this year. So looking forward to it. It's always fun covering a winner. Trust me. People enjoy it. That goes without saying. Look what the crowds did for the football. I'm wondering what it's going to be like for those first three non-con games that aren't big opponents. Are the fans going to, are they going to show out and show up and understand that in when you're supporting your football program, you have to support them in all the games, not the big games. I promise you, these other places, it doesn't matter who they're playing. The people treat the games the same. And it'll be interesting to see if the Indiana fans will do that. Those first three games are games that Indiana are obviously going to win. They're not, they're tune-up games. That's all they are. They're tune-up games. But then it gets real. And it gets real fast when Illinois comes to town. But I'm hoping that, I'm hoping it's more of a festive atmosphere in those first three games by fans coming out and enjoying it. Although one of those is on a Friday. I'm not a fan of that. But the first game, 2:30 against Old Dominion, gives you time to tailgate, enjoy it. The next game, Kennesaw State, is a noon game. Not as much tailgating going on there. But then you follow that up with a late Friday game. It's going to be weird. Not a lot of tailgating there either because people getting off work. So wonky schedules. Wonky schedules. But we'll see. Looking forward to it. A fun season. Hey, let's take a quick break from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios. Dustin Epirik will join us. Zach Browning, talk some football as well. On the other side, from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios, appreciate you being with us and our great sponsors like Cheryl Sizemore, greatest realtor in the world. Go to CherylSizemoreSales@gmail.com. I'm telling you, from personal experience, she will go the extra mile to make your life easier. Trust me on that. And Hard Truth, get out to Hard Truth, Nashville. Visit Hard Truth. It's a great place. They have tons of great products. Great restaurant, tours. It's on a beautiful 325-acre facility. Everybody loves it when they go. We're back with more from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios on this Monday. So happy to have you with us. Hope you had a good weekend and looking forward to a good week. NCAA President Charlie Baker says he sees value in expanding the NCAA tournament by a handful of games, which, you know, there's been talk of that, which I personally don't see. Just look at last season. Indiana didn't deserve to be in, but they just, along with West Virginia, they just deserved to be in over North Carolina. That was the only issue last year. Other than that, there was no complaining that, oh, this team, they deserve to be in. No, they didn't. They did not. North Carolina absolutely did not deserve to be in. That was fraud. That was complete fraudulent by Bubba Cunningham, their AD, who was the head of the committee. I mean, I've never seen such brash, fraudulent behavior in a committee. And No repercussions. Still like to know, did he get that bonus that was in his contract for his team making the NCAA tournament? But Charlie Baker, the NCAA president, says he does see value in expanding the tournament by a handful of games, speaking during Big 12 spring meetings, where conference leaders are discussing everything from the house settlement going on and on. Baker discussed the idea of expanding from 68 to 72 or 76. So that would be 8 more teams. So think about last season when there was people just complaining a little bit about those last 3 teams, whether it was Indiana, West Virginia, and North Carolina, yada, yada. That's it. Not 8 more teams. What the hell does 8 more teams do? You already have teams that barely make it in it that play in the play-in game. You're at the bottom already. But yet you want to add more bottom feeders? It is nothing but a money grab. And it cannot be good basketball. Those teams will suck. The teams at the bottom already suck. And then you want to add more sucky teams. Why? You're not adding value. There is no value to be had by doing that. There is no value to be had by adding. There's no value to the tournament by adding 8 more unworthy teams. I mean, they're going to get to the point where they may not. There may be teams that have losing records getting in, which that has happened by winning a tournament, but it's ridiculous. It's just about money. So there you go. In the wake of the historic men's basketball season that saw conference land, the SEC land a record 14 teams in the NCAA tournament and Florida win the Natty, the SEC is looking to repeat history. One interesting headwind for the SEC and other top conferences for the upcoming year mentioned at the league meetings this week, and its looming factor hovering over the next men's basketball season. Asked about the SEC's quest to replicate history, first-year Texas coach Sean Miller pointed out that the latest numbers in the NCAA transfer portal essentially show 25% of the pie missing in terms of quality veteran players because of a reduction in numbers of those with an extra year of eligibility from the COVID eligibility rules. He said that is as wild as anyone considered this men's basketball portal to set up the 25 season. There was a missing notion. I'm not understanding what he's saying. One thing that's definitely going to change, and I don't think that it's talked about a lot in basketball, is the no COVID year. In our case, we had a number of players in my 3 years at Xavier that were exercising their 5th year, if a year that doesn't exist right now. Yeah, well, it didn't used to exist. Stop complaining. Get your players and play. Gee whiz. Yeah, I'm not interested much that Sean Miller has to say. I have to be honest. It's always something looking towards them. How about baseball? I know that the Cubs, the Reds had a series. Got Cubs fans on here. How did that go, by the way? I didn't get to see that, but right now in the standings, the Cubs are in first place. Yes, they are. 37-22. They've got a 4-game lead over the Cardinals, by the way. Cincinnati Reds are 8.5 games back. So you got that going for us, which is not good. Pittsburgh Pirates, of our good friend Mike DeCourcy, they're dead last in their conference, or division, rather. And the Rockies, 9-50. Wow. I mean, that's a winning percentage of 15%. In the differential category of runs, like division leaders, the New York Yankees are plus 98. The last place in that division is -93. Last place in the Central, -52. Last place in the West, -110. In the National League in the East, the last place is -79. In the Central, it's only -58. The Rockies, -185. Whoops. That's why do you put out a team, a professional team like that? I don't get it. It's the home fans that this is like the Chicago White Sox, who are doing better than that, who are doing twice as good as the Rockies. But why? The league should not allow teams to put out a team that is that bad. I mean, that's horrible for a professional team. There's always going to be a last place. I get that. But that's beyond, because the team right in front of them, Arizona, is 28-31. My gosh, they're only three games under 500. So this is a massive, massive difference. The Colorado Rockies they're on a different planet than every other major league team. Every one of them. Yeah, there you go. White Sox versus Rockies. What a game that would be. That would be something. Michael says the NCAA is too busy adding more teams to the basketball tournament instead of providing an answer. You know what? You've got different groups working on that stuff, man. It's not like the same people are working on that, by the way. And they're not the only – Leal and Goody are not the only two waivers, I'm sure, that are on the desk of whoever is making those decisions. Russell says Indiana's Devise is waiting on the NCAA's decisions on those waivers. He hopes for clarification soon. Yeah, well, that's what was said at Huber's, of course. But we'll look forward to it. Hey, we've got more coming up here at the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios on this Monday. And welcoming in our good friend Dustin DePirik from the Indy Star. Man, it's been a great run for you as the Pacers now reached the NBA Finals, Dustin, and not a surprise is the way they have played, but it's still a surprise if we go back to pre-January. Not a team that a lot of people probably picked to be in this position.
No, in middle of December, you weren't sure if they weren't going to be a lottery team. You know, the way things started, obviously 10-15 wasn't good. You know, obviously at that point, you know, had gotten a lot of bad breaks early in the season. You know, you've seen now the importance of some of the guys they were missing. And Andrew Nembhard was dealing with knee tendonitis, and Aaron Nesmith had a sprained right ankle that cost him 35 games, and Ben Shepherd, you know, strained an oblique. And those are three really important guys, and you can really see that now, but just the importance of them on defense, the things that they give you just on both ends, just the way they serve as connective tissue. And, you know, on top of that, you had Tyrese Halliburton not playing particularly well in the first month of the season, you know, up till basically end of November, he was pretty bad. So at that stretch, you're looking at that team and saying, well, where is this group going? But really, since then, it's been terrific. I mean, even despite that, obviously coming into the playoffs, my expectation was they were still going to get to somebody like Cleveland and get beat, because you're talking with, you know, about having two 60-win teams in the East, in Cleveland and Boston. So I would say even at that point, you're thinking, well, it'd be a surprise that you know, the 4-seed would get passed, or really that either one of the teams that were in the Eastern Conference Finals would be there, because it just seemed like Cleveland and Boston were really just on a collision course the entire season. But, you know, didn't just win that semifinal series, but won it handily. And then some more impressive work in this past series, you know, to put the Knicks away. The Knicks are a tough out, and, you know, the Pacers had a couple shaky games in there, but, you know, otherwise just a really impressive performance for them to go up 2-0 in the road, up 3-1 to start with, you know, close it out at home in game six. Just a lot of impressive work for this group to come together the way they did, and, you know, again, shake off some of the bad start that they had, and get themselves in this position.
Roswell says he saw Dustin mugging in the background on one of the many Pacer videos going around.
I don't know that I mugged. I was behind Miles Turner. I was behind Miles Turner when he was meeting with Nancy Leonard. Now, that was a really cool moment, because it's weird with these, you know, post-game ceremonies things, because you're just not sure, you know, as a reporter, you're not sure where you're supposed to be and not, because you're just like, all right, well, you know, like what are we allowed to do? What are we not allowed to do? Because at first you're not on the floor. So, you know, you kind of watch it from your press seat. Then you got to kind of scramble down there and decide what you're going to see. And you don't know how long you have until press conferences and stuff. And you're trying to take in all of it at once. It's like, it's definitely like system overload, you know, and you're just trying to grab onto anything to you know, catch as much sort of, you know, there's a whole lot of meaningful stuff going on all at once and you're trying to see it all. But, you know, I did manage to get down there, you know, basically that, you know, I ran one of the PR people and they said, basically you got like 10 minutes to just watch this, you know, just to kind of take as much of this in and bop around. And you can't talk to anybody, but you could just see this. And so I saw Miles Turner, you know, just meeting with Nancy Leonard. And that's just a really cool moment. You know, Miles has just been, it's been really impressive to watch, you know, him grow into this is sort of, you know, like there's everybody's got kind of a different leadership role out of the guys that you would kind of put in that category. Like there's not one guy that you look at and say he's the dude. But Miles is probably, you know, ambassador number one, if you will, in terms of just being a guy who's out there just, you know, pushing the brand. Obviously, Halliburton's the guy with the biggest name, and certainly he's the most sort of media savvy and, you know, the best player and all these kinds of things. But like Miles really sells what the Pacers have done and what he's been around, because I mean, he's been there for 10 years. I mean, he goes back to Paul George.
It's amazing. That's an amazing thing.
It is. I mean, at this stage, I mean, particularly how many times they've looked to trade him and it hasn't worked out. And you know, particularly this last stretch when they were heading into this, you know, like after they acquired Halliburton, you know, there was certainly a moment where they were thinking they might, you know, that it might be the right move for them, and they ended up doing it. He ended up being just the best fit that you could have at center. I mean, I understand people look at Miles and say, well, he doesn't do this thing, he doesn't do that thing, but what he does is really important. It really fits, you know, what they do. You know, he's a three-level scorer. I mean, he scores at the rim. He scores in mid-range. He hits threes. He's really reliable as a pick-and-pop three-point shooter. And that just works really well for Tyrese Halliburton's game, just having a center, you know, kind of, you know, setting a ball screen. You don't know what he's going to do. If you're defending, you're like, all right, well, you've got to be cognizant of him staying back and hitting the three, and you've got to be cognizant of going to the rim, but he might just stop on you and pull up for 10 feet. And being able to do that makes him an offensive weapon that really fits next to Halliburton, because he's random as well. But he's just been, he's been really solid. I thought did a remarkable job kind of mentally, emotionally, from processing that stretch where he thought he was going to be traded. And really, since he's got an extension, you know, going back to, I think it was January of 23, you've really just seen a different guy. I mean, like, he was in a weird place heading up to that, but I think once he got that faith from the organization that they wanted him around, you know, he's just been just overjoyed to be around this. And so like the level out of everybody that, you know, you're happy for, basically in that stretch. And it's like, obviously as a reporter, you're not supposed to have emotions with it, but like, you just see human beings that you've been around, you know, accomplish something. And you're just like, okay, well that's, you can't be, you know, opposed to it, I guess is the best way to put it.
You can't lock humanity out.
Right. You kind of, you know, you have to say like, you know what, like good for somebody like Miles Turner, you know, for going through all this, and everything that, you know, and he still takes heat, you know, like on any random stretch in this, no matter how much he's done, it'll still be, you know, he'll miss a couple rebounds, or, you know, Mitchell Robinson got a couple boards. It's like, what is Miles doing? It's like, oh my God, you know, and like, he still catches heat. But he's, you know, he's pushed through it and continued to, you know, just give them really good minutes, really good production, just be just a solid kind of stalwart at the front of the line for these guys.
Yeah, and this team is just fun because of what we've talked about so many times, in that, yeah, Tyrese and Pascal are probably looked at as the stars of the team, but this is a team that has a lot of stars in its universe, and you never know which of those stars is going to shine brightest on a particular night. And that is what has made this team so dangerous and why they're in the NBA finals.
Right. No, I mean, their entire operation is based on just moving the ball around, and it's supposed to not focus on one guy. And I think that's kind of like what gets, like, it's the point people miss when you're like deciding whether or not Halliburton's a superstar. And you're like, it, like, the entire point of this is it doesn't matter. Like, it's not like, no, you know, like at the end of the day, like if he gets superstar numbers or not, like, or like, it's like, if he meets somebody's definition of what a superstar is, like, that's not relevant. The point is the ball moves, you know, the point is the ball moves. The point is that it finds the open man. And that point is that Halliburton gets it moving. And, you know, like, I mean, he's the guy who sets the ethos, who sets the whole foundation of the thing. But, you know, like, that leads to anybody can be open. Thomas Bryant can be open and bang three threes in an important game, you know, like, and it's not just, so, you know, like, it's, you know, it's anybody. Like, it's like, obviously they've got like kind of eight main rotation guys, you know, from the starting five and, you know, Mathurin and Toppin and McConnell, and most nights it's going to be one of those eight, but it can be Jairus Walker hitting a big shot. Obviously he's a little bit dinged up right now. You know, it can be Ben Shepherd hitting a three when they need it. It can be Thomas Bryant stepping in when Miles Turner's in foul trouble and making some big shots. And it was even Tony Bradley at some point in this series. You know, he barely played. He was a guy they picked up on a 10-day, but got in Mitchell Robinson's way enough to make an impact on that series and, you know, just make sure that Robinson wasn't crushing them. So no, everybody steps up, you know, and all the starting five and really those three main rotation guys have all had their moment where you've been like, well, that's the guy today. You know, and Aaron Nesmith obviously had his, has had many of those. I mean, Andrew Nembhard, I thought, had a phenomenal game in game six to put this away. You know, they switched him on to Brunson early, did a great job of just harassing him. And that was that was an interesting story too, because I mean, like, it speaks to, you know, like, the thing with Rick that's funny is, like, he gets killed for sticking with guys too long or not bringing them in fast enough or whatever it is. But, like, he tends to press a lot of buttons right. And, you know, Nembhard got busted up by Brunson last year in the semis. And so he changed that, like, Carlisle, you know, kind of changed that series when he put Nesmith on him. And so he started this series with Nesmith on Brunson kind of primarily. And, but then, you know, Nesmith picked up an early foul on Saturday and, you know, like, you know, he's obviously been dealing with the ankle and kind of pushing through that. And Carlisle, you know, moved Nembhard on him and that changes the game. Nembhard had six steals. I mean, he was just all over Brunson in that game. And you know, it's not guessing, obviously. Like, he comes from somewhere with this, but you know, it's like you would say, like, okay, well, you had to have Nesmith on him because you saw what, you know, Brunson did to Nembhard last year. So you can't, you know, chance that again. But you know, like Rick just said, like, I had a really good feeling that Nembhard was going to have a great game, and he'd had a really poor shooting performance in this series. Big thing that changed there was when they switched their lineup up, they ended up putting Ananobi on him, and OG, you know, basically swallowed him up. I mean, that's a really tough, you know, deal for Nembhard to be guarded by OG. I mean, he's given up a lot of size there. And so he had to kind of figure out a way to respond, and figure out, but, you know, like, one thing Rick did, he's like, it causes a natural cross match. He's like OG then has to, you know, if he still wants to guard Nembhard, like, and Nembhard's not guarding him, like, he's got to flip that, and they got to decide if it's still worth it for them to put Ananobi on him. And not only that, like, in transition, you at least have an opportunity, in a lot of cases where the other guy that you were just guarding is probably going to be on you, you know, when it immediately flips. So, you know, like, it you know, left for some opportunities for Nembhard that he hadn't had in several games, and he ended up with a terrific game. So, no, that's what it's been all year. And these guys just, you know, they keep finding ways, and certainly, you know, you expect Halliburton most nights, you expect Siakam every night. You know, some nights it's Turner, some nights it's Nesmith, some nights it's Nembhard, some nights it's McConnell, some nights it's Toppin, some nights it's Mathurin. You know, you never know which of those guys is going to step up, but they do. You know, you always get some of them, and it's, you know, usually nights when they, you know, they get six or seven guys in double figures, and that's when they're at their most dangerous.
Yeah, and like I said earlier, even down to the role players, Thomas Bryant didn't play in the game before, and I had that conversation with Todd Lurie on Friday, and he talked about, hey, a lot of times it's about matchups where he plays in this game, he's not going to play in the next game. He said he may play a ton of minutes in the next game, which was the other night, and he did. And did he play well? And having a guy come off your bench that gets spotty minutes and to play that well, that's huge for any team. It doesn't matter who it is. But, man, if you can have a guy that doesn't really get to play with frequency, it's amazing what that does, because what do you end up with? I don't even remember, but it was double-digit points.
Yeah, 11 points, you know, three threes and a couple free throws, three rebounds, a big block shot, really big block shot.
On OG!
Yeah, and so I think, well, I mean, like, you got to remember, like, just the narrative of the backup center position for this team. You remember the first 8 days of the season, they had two backup centers tear their Achilles in 8 days. So they had James Wiseman, you know, like off season, you know, they basically decided they couldn't pay Jalen Smith, you know, what he was going to get. And so they let him walk. They go get James Wiseman, who had, you know, just, you know, hadn't put it together in his first couple stops. Obviously, that's the guy that was number two pick out of Memphis, you know, just really good athlete, really big guy. You know, they had, you know, high hopes for him. Isaiah Jackson is a guy that really played well in the postseason, had been a terrific athlete. Both of those guys tear their Achilles in the first 8 days of the season. You know, I mean, like that's tough to watch. That's a heck of a break. You know, that's tough to be like, all right, like you're expecting depth out of that spot. So, you know, at that point, they're in a bind. You know, like they're missing two dudes that are you know, like that they really feel good about. And, you know, again, they're done. You know, basically, like, you know, they had left open the possibility that they could get back by the end of the year. Obviously, neither one of them did. They ended up, you know, trading Wiseman, basically. But, you know, that's two open holes in your lineup, you know, in your roster right out of the gate. So, I mean, they're in scramble mode at backup center the rest of the year. I mean, for a while, they were playing Obi Toppin. They signed Moses Brown for a little bit. Guy used to play at UCLA and was in the G League at that point. They had to wade water because, I mean, they targeted Bryant pretty early, but you couldn't, the way it works in the NBA, the CBA, if you sign a free agent contract in the offseason, you can't be traded until December 15th. And Bryant was in Miami, not playing at all, you know, basically had been moved, you know, Kelly Ware jumped him, you know, basically among two, you know, IU guys. And they, you know, but like, you know, the Heat were certainly willing to move him, but they couldn't do it until December 15th. You know, they had to just sort of hang in there. So, yeah, the Pacers gave Moses Brown like a 10-day. I don't think they even gave him a 10-day. I mean, I think they just signed him a contract and waived him. And, you know, so they get Bryant. Basically, like, they were so all over Bryant that the Heat were so ready to make the move that basically that breaks like a day before, you know, they could even get him. And, you know, like, so like the Heat were like, hey, man, we can't use him. We'll just, you know, you can have him for practically nothing. Let's just do a pick swap. You know, something that's, you know, you'll really be giving us nothing at the end of the day. And you can just have him. We like this guy, but he's just not going to play for us. So, you know, you need him. Go ahead. And, you know, so they get Bryant that way. And then they eventually trade Wiseman, you know, to Toronto for practically nothing, just to open up the spot. And they signed Bradley to a 10-day and then a second 10-day. And, you know, basically you end up using both of those guys. You know, basically it was for different matchups. I mean, they felt like Bradley's a little bigger, and Bradley just, they just feel like Bradley's a little, the rebounding is more of his strength. And so they looked at Mitchell Robinson and said, okay, we need somebody just to get in his way. Like, Bradley doesn't have to do anything else. Bryant's got a more complete skill set. He can step out and shoot the three. Bradley's three-point shooting is rough, just to be, you know, like, safe about it, nice about it. But Bradley can really rebound. You know, Bradley can get in there and mix it up. And so, you know, like, and he can at least just box out. I mean, even if he's not going to get the rebound himself, I mean, he can just put a body on Mitchell Robinson out there getting a lot of the minutes, because we're just like, just put a body on Robinson. Like, you're out there to be in his way, and you just make it harder for him to rebound. And he's going to get a bunch of them, but just keep him away from the glass as much as you can. Just step in his way. And he was really effective, you know, for that. But they needed a little bit more when Turner goes out. Basically, they weren't, you know, it wasn't a situation where if you just put Bradley in there, you know, I mean, I think he still did play. But he ended up straining his hip and he was out. I think it was actually game five. Like, in game five, he strained his hip and Bryant ended up playing. And so Bradley didn't play because Carlisle said he couldn't really extend, you know, just couldn't get, you know, just hip didn't feel right enough to get explosion. And basically you're going to get more out of Bryant. So, you know, like, that's, they've both had to be ready for that. I mean, Bradley went weeks without playing before they got him in. I don't know. I mean, like, he barely, you know, like, he barely even entered the game in Cleveland or Milwaukee at all. And so it was just basically they just didn't see an opening for him to make an impact. I mean, I think he made, you know, got some garbage time minutes, but basically it was nothing. But, you know, like, they saw an opportunity for him to play against the Knicks. And then it's like, all right, well, the situation changes and, you know, Bryant plays. And both of those guys, like, you know, during the course of the early parts of the season, we're like, I don't know if I'm going to play again. You know, like, Bryant wasn't sure he was going to get any minutes in Miami. Like, Bradley was like 2 years in on a deal in the G League. You know, like, I mean, he'd been out of the NBA for like 2 years. So both of these guys are like just incredibly grateful just to be in the league, just to have a uniform. And so, like, anything you let these guys do, they're jumping at the chance. You know, they're looking at any opportunity. So, you know, they're not in position to get upset when they don't play in the first place. You know, that makes a difference. I mean, like, this was you know, a godsend opportunity for both of them. But they are just wired as good dudes. I mean, they're just easy, you know, locker room guys. You know, like Bryant, I mean, anybody that's covered Bryant, you know, from at his days at IU, like that's all I heard from it. Many of you guys who were around him, you know, I wasn't on the beat at that time. You know, I missed those 2 years. I think it was when I was in Tennessee, but I mean, he just, everybody I talked to was like, man, you know, people reached out to me like JD and, you know, Zach, just to be like, dude, you're gonna love covering Thomas Bryant. You know, like, he's just a super good dude. And, you know, like, that's what he's been in the locker room, and they love him. You know, I mean, like, he's hilarious. I mean, he's a guy that really fits their vibe really well. Just, you know, like, fun. It just seems like he's a fun dude to be around, but is really enjoying the experience, is ecstatic just to be there. And so, like, you put Thomas Bryant in, he just can't wait. I mean, like, he's got, you know, you'll see moments where he's out of position or something like that, but it's like, he's never not going hard. You know, yes, that's exactly right from Brian S. He's never not going hard. I mean, like, there are times when he's like, you know, misses an assignment or gets caught up in a screen. There was one time, like, I saw him just sort of like backpedal, lose his footing, and like just, you spend the entire, you know, like, go through the entire lane tripping. But like, he, you know, like, whatever he does hard. Even if he's not right, he's going to figure, you know, he's going to play hard until he figures it out.
Absolutely. And knows that you've got to take and play the minutes that you're given.
Sure.
Because that's how you get more minutes. Right. And he has done a superb job with that. And so it has been great to see him get that opportunity, but more importantly, as a team, get it. But yeah, you hate to see OG have to go out, but that's part of life, man. But good luck to Thomas Bryant. And man, look at Thomas Bryant. He started out on a different team at the start of the season, and now he's in the NBA Finals. So what a great turn of events for him. And he gets to do it in the state where he played college ball, where you have a lot of fans that have a lot of love for him. His game, his improvement is amazing, but that shows you how and why guys that once they get to the pro leagues, his improvement, he was not a three-point shooter in college, and he knocks these downs, and he's knocking these down when he gets the opportunity at the NBA level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wait, I got, we were talking about Thomas still, right? Or are we talking about OG?
Thomas.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, it's, you know, when you have to, like, you're in a position where you have to, I mean, like, the offense of the NBA just requires it, basically, is for five guys to step out, you know, for the most part. I mean, like, there's, you know, not a handful, but, you know, probably, I don't know, out of, if there's 60 centers top, you know, first and second string, maybe 20 of them don't shoot threes. Somewhere in that respect, and most of those guys are backups. But like, if you can step in and shoot a three, it makes a huge difference. And you know, Bryant, it, you know, like it matters in the Pacers' offense that the five man can shoot a three. You know, the because Turner can do it. Turner's having his best season, three pointers wise, and being able to pick and pop off a screen makes a difference. Being able to space the floor when, you know, they're running when Siakam's the guy just setting the ball screen, you know, all that stuff makes a difference. I mean, just their ability to play random, their ability to be tough to guard, you know, just it has helped a lot by having somebody that can shoot threes. Like, I mean, nobody, you know, people post up in this league, but people don't just post up is the thing. Like, where in college, you'll see a guy run down to the post, turn around, and just play with his back to the basket the entire time. Like, you know, even when centers are posting up, they're getting there out of movement, you know, like they're waiting until, you know, somebody switches onto them, and that's when they post. You know, they don't do it, they don't spend an entire possession, you know, like this. And so you got to be able to move, and you know, you have to be, it helps to force somebody to defend you out there. You know, it goes a long way to make sure that whoever's guarding you can't sit back in the paint and wait for somebody else to try to go block their shot. You know, so like, it's really important to be able to step back and hit a three if you're a good five man, and Brian's come a long way with that. But yeah, I mean, it varies, but he's had various spots where he's had to step in. He's got a ring already, you know, from Denver. Obviously, he didn't play much on that team in particular. But I mean, everywhere he's gone, he's made an impact. You know, he's obviously not been a top-level guy necessarily anywhere. But, you know, as a starter, I think, with the Wizards for a while, you know, like, made an impact with the Lakers, you know, like, stuff like that. I mean, he's been important. He's been useful for a lot of teams, you know, just in his time. And he, you know, just feels like it's been longer than it is. I guess it's close to 9 years now. So, but yeah, he's come a long way. And also, I mean, like, really just from the beginning, you could just see the importance that he was going to have. And they were just so desperate to have anybody at that spot, to step in. And he's been really good there.
Yeah, and it's been fun to watch this. Now they've got to take on yet another gargantuan task, but they have met every challenge so far. Milwaukee, they were expected to win that series. I mean, we all expected that. But then you get to Cleveland, and no, not many people expected them to win that. Not only, I mentioned this earlier, but the ESPN guys, I think, went 0 for 22 or something like that in picking the Pacers through this playoffs.
I mean, I picked Cleveland. I'm not going to sit there and lie to you. Like, I'm not, you know.
You're the number one seed. Why would you not?
Right. I mean, like, because we do get on our high horses a little bit here where it's like, oh, you know, the – national media doesn't respect them or whatever, and like, you know, like as though like, you know, and like, look, like, I mean, I've been telling everybody how good this team is, but I thought Cleveland was really good. You know,
well,
like,
they were
Cleveland's not like this big market franchise of like, you know, like Cleveland's like as though Cleveland doesn't have its own, you know, feelings of like disrespect by the bigger markets in sports in general. But I thought that Cleveland team was really good, you know, between Mitchell and Mobley and Garland and Jared Allen, you know, and they won 64 games. And Kenny Atkinson was coach of the year. And I was just like, well, you know, when you're that good, I mean, like, how many winning streaks did they have? They were double figure wins. I mean, like, their losses were spaced out. I mean, like, it was, you know, like they didn't lose two in a row very often. You know, like they didn't lose multiple games in a row very often. But I mean, the Pacers just took control of that series from the beginning. And it's just like after when the Pacers rallied back in one game two, I'm like, well, they're actually going to do this. You know, this is for real. And, you know, I've kind of been picking them since, but, you know, like Cleveland was a more established team. And so, like, I mean, I picked the Cavs in seven and I thought I was being respectful of the Pacers. And so I want to address the Siakam thing, by the way, because I'm getting heat, man. But anyway, yeah, I mean, I thought they were going to lose. You know, I thought they were going to lose to Cleveland. I thought it was.
Well, you were in the majority. I mean, who didn't? And with good reason. There's right. No, you don't pick things with your heart. You use your brain and your mind like you did.
I'm trying not to be hung. That's basically the biggest thing.
Like, exactly.
I pick Pacers every time.
You picked it as you saw it, and it made sense because.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so my point is, it's not just like the national media. Like, it was everybody. I mean, because again, a team wins 64 games, you expect to at least get to the conference finals. You know, you just presume that, you know, kind of pencil that in. And I thought, hey, you know, if the Pacers get to the semis, get beat by a 64 win team, win 50 games, you know, that's a nice feather in the cap. Like, that's a nice season. You can't, you know, ding them at all. They're a contender. They're a team that's in a really good place. You know, if that's how it ends, fine. And they end up, you know, not just winning, but really dominating that series and taking it at five. It was really impressive. And, you know, pulling this one off. So, yeah, I mean, so now you go from Knicks, you know, go from the Knicks to the Thunder. I mean, as good as Cleveland was, the Thunder are awesome. Like, the last time, you know, they got beat by the Thunder in the end of March, so they didn't beat Oklahoma City in two opportunities, and they got beat 132-11 in March. And, you know, Carlisle basically comes out after that and is like, man, we just got beat by the best team on the planet right now. And so, like, obviously the Pacers are operating like one of the best teams on the planet, so I mean, they are, you know, they were playing just fine then at the end of March, and like really since the middle of December, from the middle of December on, they were 40-17. So that's a heck of a record. But, you know, like Thunder won 68-14. So even if you just take the smaller, kind of more successful version of the Pacers season, you know, like the Thunder were still like, you know, like they still lost games, fewer games in their whole year. And they do present the challenge that basically, like, what the Pacers kind of theory of the case is, that they're going to wear you down, that they're going to exhaust you with all of this depth and, you know, just run bodies at you and in full court press and play, you know, and break as much as you can, and wear you down. And the Thunder is the first team they've played that's not built for that. That's like, they're not built to be worn down. I mean, they roll 10 deep and, you know, like, easy, and they don't, you know, like, there's not a lot of guys there that you're like, oh, well, that's cake. If you get that guy on the floor, you're in good shape. Like, no, like Kayson Wallace and like Alex Caruso are like two top line defenders, and they come off the bench for them. You know, Isaiah Joe is their best 3-point shooter, and he comes off the bench for them. You know, like, they've got dudes, and they've got two lines of dudes that, you know, they've got two bigs that they can trust, and Jalen Williams and Kendrick Williams that come off the bench. You know, like, they got a full, really good second unit. They could play, you know, they could play fast if you want to. They could play slow if you want to. They could really, really guard. And, you know, like, and they've got the MVP. So, you know, like.
And did you mention that Jairus Walker's out?
He's out at least the first two games with an ankle injury. It's a sprain, apparently. He was on another radio station this morning.
The Fan, yeah.
Yeah, and he he said basically that it's going to be a that he's going to be out at least the first two. And, again, it was a sprain. He didn't, I think a lot of people thought it would be broken. And so nothing he said suggested a fracture. So I think that's worth noting. Basically gave the impression that he's going to do treatment and see where it goes. And so, like, obviously, you can treat a sprain, like a fracture, you just have to let heal, and it might heal cleaner in the long term. And a sprain might, some severe sprains might be worse than a break. But basically, like, if you break something, you're out, for a while, and there's just nothing you could do about that. So he's, so apparently, he didn't say there's no break, but, got the impression just because it's something that he thinks that over the course of the series that it's possible for enough treatment to get it done, it does not suggest a fracture.
We'll take a quick break. The beat writer from the Indy Star for the Pacers, Dustin Napierik, with us. When we come back, we'll talk about Pascal Siakam and what chance do the Pacers have against this vaunted Oklahoma City team? Coming to you from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios on this Monday. I hope you had a great weekend and the week started off right. Dustin Napierik, the beat writer from the Indy Star for the Pacers, joining us. And you're getting ready to head to Oklahoma City. The games start on Thursday as the NBA Finals get beginning. Pascal Siakam won the Larry Bird Eastern Conference MVP.
Yeah.
Deserving?
I'm in trouble on that. I do want to say I'm not going to Oklahoma City because I got a wedding this weekend. My wife's best friend, Lindsay, is getting married. And my boy, Zach Osterman, is stepping up for me. So I want to send my appreciation to him. That's my boy. Obviously, you guys all know we go back forever. But he's doing me a real big solid on this one because this is one.
I remember him talking. I saw him down at Huber's, and he was talking about that he would be covering the.
He will be covering game one and two of the finals, so that'll be your guy to follow for the first couple games of the series. So that's a really big one. This is you got some of them. Obviously, in the course of this job, you have to skip some weddings, but there's you can't skip, and this is one of the ones you can't skip. So, obviously timing is what it is, but appreciate Zach, kind of stepping up for me. So that'll be your guy.
I'm sure he doesn't exactly hate getting to go cover an NBA Finals game.
Probably not, but he is a father of two, it's a burden, basically. Like, it's not nothing. It's a lot of days, out on the road. I mean, he'll be there. I don't know if he'll be there Wednesday, but he'll at least be there Thursday through Sunday. And so that is not easy. So thanks to Audrey too, by the way, that is a not small burden on our Audrey coming through for this. So from our house to yours, Osterman's, we thank you. Obviously these are friends of ours that go for me back 15 years. So you guys all know that, but anyway, yeah, the Siakam vote. So I'm in like, everybody's killing me over this.
Why?
Because, well, everybody thought Halliburton should get it. And not everybody, a lot of people do. So it's a 5-4 vote. I did not expect it to be.
I don't think so. I agree with you. I mean, not that Siakam score had 39 points in one game. He had
three 30-point games. My view was he's just a little bit more consistent. If you ask me who is their MVP as a team, who is the guy that most makes them go, who is the reason they're in the position they're in, I would say Tyrese. That's certainly the case. And if you look and as Rick Carlisle mentioned before, it's like, they don't have Pascal if they don't get Tyrese first, basically that would never have happened. They wouldn't have been in position to be able to acquire a guy like that. They wouldn't have, they had to get to a place where it was a place that Pascal wanted to go and wanted to resign. And, Tyrese Halliburton is number one reason why that's the case. So, but that's not what the vote's supposed to be about. It's just supposed to be about that series. It's supposed to be those games. And
right.
I got busted up a couple years ago when they went to the in-season tournament finals, and I voted for Tyrese, even though they lost to the Lakers, because I thought it was a bigger deal for the Pacers to be there than the Lakers were. I thought they had a tougher road to get there. I thought Halliburton was incredible the entire event. And basically I was reminded by, you know, the NBA folks that were putting the vote together. They said, hey, you just remember, it's the whole event. It's not just, you know, these games in Vegas. It's not just this game. It's the whole thing going all the way back to group play. You know, like, you're considering every game that was involved. And I was like, you know what? I think Halliburton is the most important player. I think the Pacers are going to get more out of this than the Lakers do. And the fact that they get, they're in some, you know, environments and situations that they wouldn't be in otherwise. Basically, I mean, they're never on TV. You know, they get, you know, they got another game against Boston at home. They got a game against Milwaukee. You know, like, all of this, you know, like, creates a more, this competitive environment that's going to make a difference for them when they get in the playoffs. They've achieved more by being there, and Halliburton's the central reason why they did. So, you know, like, even though they lost the series, I still thought Halliburton was the most important player in the whole event. And I got hell for that because I was the only guy who voted for him then. But this time, it's a 5-4 vote. I went Siakam. And so if I would have voted for Halliburton, it would have been Halliburton. And so, like, I feel weird about that.
You were the deciding vote, so we have to remember
we're all the deciding vote. Anybody who voted for Siakam is technically the deciding vote, you know. So, like, it's not just me. It's not like they went 4-4 and they were like, Dustin, what do you think? I had no idea who was.
Oh, you're not the chief. So you're like, I'm not the chief justice here.
No, this isn't like exactly like it is 9 also, which is sort of, you know, hilarious. But like, it's not like I was meeting in there where it's, you know, like you get all the votes and you have a sense where everybody's going, you know, like
how they decide who with that small of a number, how they decide, which I know beat writers.
It's mostly. Yeah, I think they do one beat writer from each team, and they do a lot of sort of national voices, TV, you know, like national print reporters, national, you know, but like Reggie Miller got a vote. I know Katie George got a vote from ESPN. You know, Steve Ashbrook covering it for NBA.com. Probably Bontemps from ESPN, I would think. Maybe Joe Varden from The Athletic. I know all got a vote. And so I can't think of, I'm not sure who else, but.
That sounds like a very broad, broad mix.
Broad spectrum. So yeah, I mean, like, we didn't convene, you know, it's not like we decided like, okay, who are we giving this to? It's just, you have your vote. And I thought, just especially, you know, I mean, like, it's also like the rhythm of covering a game. Like, you know, I was like, Pascal had like 25 at half or something like that, or 20 something at half, and they were up. And I was like, okay, well, he's the guy. You know, he's that, it is my fault, Brian. I'm sorry. I did it. I'm the guy, but I'm catching all kinds of hell for this. But, you know, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, it's still, it, you know, like, they're there, you know, like, I don't think anybody's going to be mad at me when I go in the locker room. You know, like, Ty might be a little miffed, I'm not sure. But all the same, it's not like I went and picked Brunson or something like that. You know, like, it's another one, certainly a guy that had a lot to do with them going there, and they're there, you know, they're in the NBA finals. That's going to be the most important thing that they remember. Obviously, it's not, you know, whoever wins that trinket doesn't really stand out that much, in the first place. And obviously finals MVP ends up being a bigger thing. So if they win it, that's going to be more remembered. And if Tyrese goes out and wins that thing, he'll totally forget who even won Eastern Conference Finals MVP. So, you know, like, but yeah, it's a trip. It's funny. It's just funny to me that it's like, you know, like, they'll kill you on Twitter for this stuff, man. People see this stuff and they're up, you know, they're at you, you know, and they're like, I cannot believe you're that ignorant. I'm like, I watch this team all the time. What do you mean? Like, stop. I don't hear about anything about ignorance, you know.
But, all right. So the overwhelming favorite is Oklahoma City in this series, in this upcoming NBA Finals series. What shot do the Pacers have?
I mean, they have a shot. I mean, like, you know, like, you can always string together stuff. Like, I do think the Thunder are a machine. Like, I mean, like, I watch them and I see a machine. Shea's a machine. Like, I think it's weird. Gilgeous Alexander is I can't think of a immediate, you know, kind of analog for him that, like, he's the MVP of the league, and he's just, there's just so little flash to his game. You know, like, for a guy that averages 37, like, you there's not like these like highlight reel plays. It's just like he gets to his 8-foot jumper over and over and over again, and you either foul him or he hits it, you know, and then he hits threes, he gets to the rim, like, he can score at every single level. But like, you know, like, you see stuff like Anthony Edwards can get up there and just throw down a dunk or hit these bombs, you know, Curry can hit from wherever, you know, like, and Jokic just sees stuff that you're like, okay, that was a magic trick. Like, how did you possibly make that pass? How did you see that guy? Like, where did that come from? Shea, you don't really see stuff like that, but I talked to Halliburton after they lost in Oklahoma City to them, and what impressed Halliburton about him is he's like he doesn't waste a single step. He's like, everything he does has a purpose, you know, like he's going, like he's never, you know, like he's always heading in his direction, you know, and in the direction of the spot he wants to get to. There's just no wasted motion. There's just no wasted anything. And it's pretty remarkable. And like Kyrie's obviously part of his game is dancing around a little bit. You know, like he's moving in, he's moving out. Like it's this kind of like stick and move, like a boxer kind of thing. Like he'll jab and then he'll, you know, step back, and he's like his, you know, skinny, funky legs where he somehow manages to get into a step back three that he hits, even though he doesn't look, you know, like the motion doesn't seem to make any sense. Shea's the opposite, you know, like it's everything Shea does, like looks like it's going somewhere. And, you know, like you're never looking at him and say, where are you going? Like it's very clear where he's going, but you can't stop him anyway. You know, he gets there anyway. He's faster than you. He's quicker than you. And he's strong, you know, like he's wiry strong. He's a guy that like just can just power through people. And again, if you're not, you know, and he draws a foul, and Halliburton kind of pointed that out. He's like, I know that's a you know, there's not a great narrative on the sense of somebody going and being a foul merchant, that somebody kind of goes out and just finds a way to draw contact and sells it. You know, Brunson does it. Gilgeous Alexander does it, but it's just like, it is a skill, you know, and when you know that you're going to get the calls, like, hey, like, you know, like, why would you not? And so you go and get those buckets. And so they've obviously, Pacers haven't stopped the superstar yet, but they've still won, you know, like that's another thing to say that, like, you know, like they didn't stop Giannis. They didn't stop Mitchell. You know, they kind of stopped Brunson in a couple games, but those guys all put up mega numbers, and you had to be impressed by their, you know, like you didn't come away thinking that any of those three guys blew it. You know, like you didn't come away thinking that any of those guys were anything but top caliber all NBA players. And I imagine Shea will do the same thing. Obviously, the Pacers will have to find a way to get their own stuff done. I mean, they'll have to create some turnovers. They'll have to, you know, create some pace. They'll have to run at the Thunder and that not stop running and just keep going after it. The Thunder will be willing to play that pace. You know, they're not afraid of it. You know, that's not necessarily their thing, but they'll do it. But, you know, and they got to hit some shots. And Pacers got to hit some shots. And, Thunder, you know, they've got to be able to defend the Thunder, keep them from hitting shots. So, you know, when Oklahoma City shot it really well, they were, you know, pretty much a Death Star, you know, like you just couldn't touch those guys. But I mean, you know, they can miss. I mean, they've lost some games in these playoffs. You know, they had to go to seven with the Nuggets. You know, they only got beat once by Minnesota. When they got beat, they got trashed. So, you know, it's possible, you know, things can go wrong. I mean, like on paper, you don't look and see where the Thunder can lose this. But games aren't played on paper, and you just, you know, you cause enough turnovers, hit enough shots, you can flip a narrative and you can win.
Dustin DePirik from the Indy Star. Make sure you're following and keeping up with all that he does with the Indiana Pacers. And, of course, Zach, he'll be with us on Friday. So looking forward to that. Have a great week. Enjoy your trip to the wedding.
Will do. It's not a trip. It's here. But so not going anywhere. But I'll be watching. I'll be following. So, you know, I'll keep up with you guys. Thanks, y'all.
Dustin DePirik, make sure you're following. Appreciate you, my friend.
Appreciate you.
More coming up from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios. Zach Browning from the Hoosier joins us next on Indiana Sports Beat Radio from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios on this Monday. Hope you had a great weekend, and I hope we're getting your week started off right. Zach Browning from the Hoosier.com joins us now. And man, there is so much going on, although it's the off season. Lots of guys reporting right now, Zach. Basketball players probably laying down right now, wishing they hadn't gone through what they went through this morning. Football players coming into school. You've got everybody arriving in the campus, especially these new freshmen getting indoctrinated, got to go through the stuff that freshmen go through with school and all of that. There's a lot, especially for freshmen, to go through right now.
Yeah, there's plenty going on around Bloomington. You mentioned the football team. They've had summer workouts. It's been a lot of more physical conditioning stuff with Eric Owings rather than on-field stuff, drills with the position coaches and stuff like that. But on the basketball side, you mentioned it. Of course, the new initial is what they're calling it, Indiana basketball roster, announced about 25, 30 minutes ago. So those guys are all on campus. Those guys are going to start more individual workouts than anything in the coming weeks. But it's an exciting time around Bloomington. Football, basketball, everything in between. The baseball transfer portal season is getting underway in a little bit as well. So a lot of stuff just around Indiana athletics right now.
I find it notable that they call it the initial roster. What,
yeah, you're
what
exactly
spawns right. that, do you think? I mean, besides Darren DeVries' initial roster, I get that, but is that what that means? Or does that mean there's something yet to come?
I mean, you have to assume it's probably because there's something yet to come. I mean, there's still two open scholarship spots available, and those aren't going to go empty for the entirety of the season. So whether it's Anthony Leal and Luke Goody, whether it's just one of them, whether it's neither of them, and it's a couple of other guys from the portal that Indiana's yet to really announce or make contact with yet, it remains to be seen. But it is important. I do think it's kind of telling that both Luke Goody and Anthony Leal's numbers have been taken. Anthony Leal's number 3 and Luke Goody's number 10 have been taken on the initial Indiana roster. So we'll see if that pays dividends or means anything, or if we're reading kind of too far between the lines on that one. But yeah, no Anthony Leal, no Luke Goody on the quote-unquote initial roster, so we'll see if that means much. But obviously the NCAA is still a lot to weed out and a lot to go through as far as granting and not granting these waiver requests. So over the coming weeks, Anthony Leal and Luke Goody, they should know whether or not they have that extra year of college basketball eligibility or not. And then the Indiana can kind of, and Darren DeVries mentioned it at Huber's last week. He kind of mentioned it, you know, we can't sit around and wait forever on this decision for Anthony Leal and Luke Goody. So as much as we'd like to have them next season, we can't sit around for the next couple of months. We have to fill those final two spots at some point, whether they get that request granted or not.
Yep, and on the other side, football, we got to speak with both of the head coaches down at Huber's last week, and Kurt Cignetti, of course, the featured speaker, the man of the hour. But he's very happy with his recruiting, his off-season recruiting, where they're going, and you can tell because the guys that they're talking to, that they're offering, that are looking at Indiana seriously, It's a higher level, a higher caliber of player now, and that's what is going to take to continue to grow that program.
Yeah, Indiana's got some 4-stars already committed. There's a couple of other 4-stars that Indiana's kind of in on and kind of looking at and are in that final kind of grouping, the Hoosiers are. But you look at Gabe Hill, you look at Henry Olinger, Lawrence Timmons was just recently upgraded by On3 to a 4-star. So there's a lot of talent. There's 3 4-stars officially right now, according to On3 in Indiana's 2026 class. And that's fantastic for Kurt Cignetti because, again, when I talked to him last year at the end of the season, it was after that Notre Dame game, Indiana season was over. I asked Kurt Cignetti in the postgame press conference, I was like, hey, you're 2 losses this season. The eventual champion and the eventual runner-up, Ohio State, Notre Dame. What is the biggest difference between this Indiana team and that Ohio State team and that Notre Dame team? And he said, A, the depth, which Indiana has kind of helped a little bit. It's kind of difficult when you're kind of flipping how many transfer portal prospects Indiana's had to flip. But the depth was part number one. And part number two was just the sheer size and the physicality of those guys up front on both the offensive and defensive line. And I think that's something where the stars of high school recruits really come into play, and stars of college football transfer portal recruits as well. You look at a guy like Pat Coogan, he's a highly touted guy and he's big. When it comes to high school recruiting, and there's a debate, stars don't matter, blah, 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 all of that stuff. But in football, it's kind of different than basketball. In football, the stars aren't necessarily talent. They aren't necessarily ability. We've seen guys like Mikhail Kamara, Aiden Fisher, D'Angelo Pons, James Carpenter of this past year's team. They weren't highly touted guys. They didn't have a ton of stars coming into college football. And look, Mikhail Kamara is an All-American now. Aiden Fisher, D'Angelo Pons, they're All-Americans. So stars don't matter. They don't mean everything. But when you're looking at a guy like Gabe Hill, he is 17 years old and is 6'2", 275 pounds. That's what you're getting when you're getting a 4-star recruit rather than a 3-star recruit. If you look at a 3-star and he's 6', 250-pound, 17-year-old is going to have to put in a lot of work with Derek Owings to try and get to that Big Ten caliber of size. You look at the guys that Wisconsin, Iowa, Ohio State, Michigan. Those guys come in, they're 4 of their 5-star offensive linemen, they're 4 of their 5-star defensive linemen, and they are 6'5", they're 300-plus pounds, and that's something you just can't teach, and that's kind of the difference between the 3 stars and the 4 and 5 stars, at least from a college football perspective and from the high school perspective. So with Indiana being able to get those bigger guys, I mean, you look at Henry Olinger, that's a linebacker that's 6'1", 210, and he's 17 years old. You look at Lawrence Timmons, 5'10", 175 as a defensive back, and he's 17 years old. That's what you're recruiting for as far as the stars are concerned, and that's what Indiana needs to compete with the Ohio States, the Notre Dames, the Michigans of the world, and really push themselves to be consistently in that college football playoff picture.
Yeah, if Indiana can continue to get these guys that are high 3- and 4-star guys, there is no doubt they can develop them into 5-star material because they've done that. Look right now, you can look at their defense and all of those guys that are All-Americans, D'Angelo Pons, Aiden Fisher, Mikhail Kamara. There was a perfect examples right there, but they were all Americans. It's what they can become. It's what the potential is. And you mentioned that size. There's nothing you can do about size as far as increasing it or wishing it to be there. It's either there or it's not.
You're exactly right. And that's what you get out of that extra star, that extra 2 stars if you're a 4 or 5-star. Mikhail Kamara is great. And we've already seen what Indiana can do as far as a development standpoint is concerned. Indiana has shown, Kirk Cinetti has shown, that he can develop players. It's not just quarterbacks. It's not just any specific position group. He's shown he can develop guys like a D'Angelo Pons from not really a highly rated recruit. Now he's an All-American. Now he's one of the top cornerbacks in the country. A guy like Elijah Surratt on the offensive side, Mike Shanahan, developing him from where he was at St. Francis to an all-conference guy at JMU and now an all-conference caliber guy at IU in the Big Ten. So the player development is there. But what getting that 4-star guy like a Henry Olinger, like a Gabe Hill, like some of these guys in Indiana's 2026 class, it kind of gives you a head start. You're not developing them from a no-star, a guy who's maybe less talented into an All-American caliber player. You kind of get a head start and you get those physical traits. Mikhail Kamara, he's not the biggest guy, but he's obviously an All-American. You look at D'Angelo Pons, his height, his size has kind of been the knocking point against him throughout much of his career, but he doesn't care. But when you bring in a guy like Lawrence Timmons, he's a 4-star, you bring in some of these 4-stars, they have that size. So when you combine that just unteachable size plus the fact that Indiana has shown in the past couple of years, this Indiana staff, whether it's at IU or whether it's at JMU, this Indiana staff has shown that they can develop players, whether they're big, whether they're small, they can develop guys. So when you bring in that kind of higher caliber recruit, and that's what Kirk Cinetti called it at Huber, kind of a little bit of a higher caliber, upper echelon level of guy, then their kind of starting point is higher. So they can even get developed even then to a further kind of stardom at the college level. So I think that's the important part. That's where, again, stays for hours, but there is a point where you just can't teach the size that some of these 4-stars and 5-stars bring to the table.
Yeah, there's one thing I say all the time. You can't coach speed. You can't coach against speed. There's nothing you can do. Speed kills. If you have guys that are just flat out fast, there's nothing that can be done about that. Or on the other side, then you're in trouble if you've got a guy who is just a blazer. It's going to be almost impossible to cover. So size and speed are both things that Indiana has lacked throughout the years as in comparison to other programs, but that is no longer the case. And it's why they had the year that they had last year and why that they're going to have the year that they're going to have this season. Now, what this season is going to be like, I can't predict it exactly, but I feel pretty good about where they are and what they're going to do, even though this schedule is much tougher than last season. And it's tough. It's period, tough period. And anybody says otherwise is doesn't know what the hell they're talking about. You open up Big Ten play with a game against what I've seen some people rate a top 10 team already in Illinois, even though that's at home. Illinois needs to win that game. They can't afford, because they also have tough games on their schedule. So they were a team that was close to being a CFP team last year, won 10 games, but Indiana a little bit better. That is going to be a gigantic game. Then Indiana has two back-to-back road games at Iowa, at Oregon, that are also going to play a part in what people see in Indiana, how they view them, because not only getting that big win, but getting a road win, that is going to be of uber importance. They also play Penn State on the road later in the year. So if they can win one of those three and win their home games, I've said it over and over, that's a 10-2 season. And to me, 10-2 with that schedule is CFP worthy again.
Yeah, this schedule is difficult for Indiana. We will know exactly who this Indiana football team is and what kind of damage this team can do from a national perspective by week six. Because you look at the first three bye games, those non-conference games, they are what they are, but then you get right into it. Illinois, as you mentioned, some outlets have them ranked inside that top 15. Some outlets have them ranked as the number 10 team in the country. Illinois will be a big test for Indiana. That's at home. You expect that to be 52,000 capacity crowd at Memorial Stadium in week four. That's a late September game. The weather should be pretty decent for that one. Late September, it should be a pretty nice evening day whenever that kickoff is. But Illinois in week four, that'll be a big one. Again, if you think about Indiana just winning their home games, that's a home game. That's probably the biggest home game of the season for Indiana. We will know a lot about Indiana after that week. Then, of course, they go to Iowa the very next week, which that's an incredibly tough place to play. Kinnick is not easy for anybody to play in. Iowa City, not an easy place, basketball or football, to play. At Iowa, that'll be a tough one. On the road, Iowa maybe not going to be one of the top tier teams in the Big Ten this upcoming year. I don't know.
Iowa's a team that I don't know, because they brought in a really good quarterback, and I'm interested to see what that's going to be like. Plus, playing at Iowa is always tough.
You're exactly right. I just don't know if I'm yet going to put them. I'll have to see them play. I want to see them on the field. It's kind of like a Indiana basketball thing. They have all those guys they brought in, but I want to see it on the field before I kind of give them their credit and really properly rate them. But Iowa, they aren't going to be necessarily the Pitt States of the Big Ten or the Ohio States or the Oregons, but they're going to be a tough team, especially on the road. So you look at that game, and then you get the bye week. That'll be an important bye week. You can kind of reset whether you go 2-0 in those games against Illinois and Iowa, you go 0-2, 1-1, whatever it is, you kind of reset. And then you've got Oregon. Now, Autzen, again, one of those tough places to play out there in Eugene. You've got Oregon. Obviously, they were the number one team in the country for pretty much all of last season. That's going to be a tough game. Then you kind of get your break. You've got Michigan State, UCLA, Maryland. Those can kind of be some get-right weeks if you're Indiana. Michigan State isn't expected to be super good. They're at home. UCLA, we'll see what Nico can do there if he can come in and be a star, but that's at home, so you'd expect to probably win that. Maryland on the road. Maryland's not going to be great next year, so you expect to probably win that. If you're an Indiana team trying to contend for the playoff, you expect to beat Maryland on the road. And then you've got Penn State, and that's a late November or an early November game at Penn State. Not sure if that'll be the whiteout game or not, but that'll be one of, if not the toughest crowds that Indiana plays in all season. We know Indiana struggled a little bit with the crowd, with the offensive line and the cadence last year at Ohio Stadium against the Buckeyes. So those four games, though, you can see all four of those being losses potentially. You can see three or four of those, two or three maybe of those being wins. But if you're Indiana and you look at Illinois, Iowa, Oregon, and Penn State, three of which are on the road, if you can win two of those, and then you just take care of business in the rest of the games, like you said, Jim, that's 10-2. And I'd be hard-pressed to leave Indiana out of the college football playoff. Of course, the SEC will probably have something to say about that with all their whining, but I'd be hard-pressed to leave Indiana out of the college football playoff at 10-2 with two wins over two of Illinois, Iowa on the road, Oregon on the road, and Penn State on the road. So we'll have to see.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Zach Browning with TheHoosier.com. Make sure you're getting a subscription there. Their great coverage continues. Zach, thank you very much, brother.
Thanks for having me, Jim.
You betcha. That's going to wrap it up from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Back tomorrow to do it again. Till then, I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on TheHoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day.